We are today going to talk about a very involved activity, and that is, how do we form enamel? Enamel is an unusual tissue, and as you will see, it has major differences in its formation with other tissues that you so far have come to know. Now, amelogenesis has, first of all, two distinct phases. That's important. Two distinct phases, meaning there is a secretory phase in which the ameloblasts are laying down the matrix of the enamel. And as you would expect, it is mostly secretory, but there is also some breakdown of the matrix components that have been produced, and there is some back resorption. The end result of the secretory phase is that you have a 80 to 90% matrix protein by volume and 10 to 20% mineral by volume. So at the end of the secretory phase, that's what you're having. Now, the second phase, and that is something that's very new because no other heart tissue has that, is the so-called maturation phase. The ameloblasts completely change their complexion, completely change their function, and now instead of secretion, they are involved mostly in degradation and back resorption of the same proteins that they have laid down before. So they, in the secretory phase, they produce the proteins. In the maturation phase, they remove really most of them. They have some continuous secretion, but the important thing is that now, as the proteins are being removed, the mineral flows in. And so at the end of it, you have, by volume, changed the percentages. In fact, if you think, well, at the end of the secretory phase, you had something like 85% by volume matrix and 15% by volume mineral, just a general term. Now it is reversed. And at the end of the maturation phase, you have 85% by volume mineral and only 15% by volume matrix. And as you will see, that is by volume, the numbers are even more impressive when you look at it by weight, because by weight you only have 3% matrix proteins, and all the rest is really mineral by weight. So, this is one of the things that is most outstanding in amelogenesis, the two phases, a secretory phase and a maturation phase. And so we have two sets of morphologies and functional activities of the ameloblast. You have secretory ameloblast in the first part and maturation ameloblast in the second. Now, up to this point, what we have come to know is that we have cytodifferentiation of ameloblasts. Ameloblasts started out as IEE in the enamel organ. They then went on to become free ameloblasts. And at the point where the dentin began to undergo mineralization, just about right here, at that same point, the pre ameloblasts switched to their secretory phase and began to lay down enamel matrix. So at this point you have secretory ameloblasts, okay? And the stuff that they lay down is this very basophilic enamel matrix. This is the immature enamel matrix with lots of proteins and very little mineral. Now, the stages of differentiation of the ameloblasts are indicated here. They are, to some effect, under autocrine signaling by some sonic hedgehog, which they, of course, produce themselves and then act on the cells themselves. If you have sonic hedgehog, there's two things that's going to happen. One, it's going into the dental papilla, and two, it's going to go back into the cell for further differentiation. Sonic hedgehog probably has some action on the odontoblasts and a system in differentiation. As I told you before, the picture on what makes an odontoblast differentiate is not entirely complete, but clearly there are components that are being secreted by the preamyloblasts that have effect on the odontoblast differentiation. But here's the interesting thing. The sonic hedgehog also has effect on the development of the elongated and subsequently polarized morphology of the preamyloblasts. If you block the receptor for sonic hedgehog on the preamyloblasts, what is going to happen is the odontoblasts are going to lay down dentin normally. They will differentiate all right, but the preamyloblasts will not develop their elongated morphology. They stay short like this, and they will not develop their secretory phase, and they will not form enamel. So the sonic hedgehog signaling is clearly important for the differentiation of the preamyloblasts and the secretory amyloblasts, while at the same time they have really no effects. They do have an effect on the odontoblast, because in this case the receptors for the sonic hedgehog were not blocked here. Now, what we are now going to add, so we have the secretory amyloblast, what we are now going to add are the maturation amyloblasts. And to make things even more fun, there are two phases of the maturation amyloblast. They alternate between smooth surface amyloblasts and ruffled bordered amyloblasts, SA and RA maturation amyloblasts. So, and I will come back to that, but the point is that in this maturation phase there are two alternating types of amyloblasts that are involved. Then finally, at the very end, when maturation is completed, I'm just looking forward now with you, you get to this stage, you go back to essentially a stratified epithelium. The old amyloblasts are still a little taller, but not that much. And so the remaining cells of the enamel organ, the old amyloblast and the cells of the stellate reticulum and the stratum intermedium especially, form together a covering of epithelium that covers the crown until the tooth erupts. And it's important, if it were not to cover the crown until the tooth erupts, you would get cementoblasts that form cementum on the surface of the enamel. So these are the final stages of development of the amyloblasts. Now, we talked about amyloblasts, we talked about scleroblasts when we discussed the calcification of tissues. And what we found out is they have the following in common. They are all protein-secreting cells, and they form an organic matrix. That's what they all do. And they all have a role in the mineralization of that matrix. They are, in fact, the pathway for the mineral ions that are going to form the hydroxyapatite in that matrix. So as far as these basic functions are concerned, amyloblasts and other scleroblasts are the same. But where the amylogenesis differs is, first of all, that they are epithelial cells. That is, in and of itself, not very important, but they have a different origin. They have this separate maturation phase, which I started talking to you about at the beginning. Enamel matrix does not contain collagen fibers. All the other hard tissues do. And finally, the hydroxyapatite crystallites of enamel are considerably larger in all dimensions by a factor of 4. And that is what you end up with. You have hydroxyapatite crystallites that are in the ballpark figure of 200 nanometers long and 40 nanometers in diameter. And that is opposed to the diameters and lengths of the other hydroxyapatite crystallites in the other mineralized tissues. These are very global numbers, and don't get too stuck on it, but that is what we have. Now, typically, just to compare, organic matrix in mineralized dense tissues typically is collagen rich, with types 1 and type 5 mostly in bone, dentin, and cementum. In enamel, what we have is a series of non-collagenous glycoproteins, specifically amylogenin, that is the first one that we're going to encounter today, and then several others, enamelin, amyloblastin, and tocilin, which is kind of a little odd one out. But these are the proteins that we are dealing with when we are talking about enamel proteins. Somebody has just recently described a new one, amylogen, but I think until that gets a little bit further developed, I will not bother you with that. All right, here are the crystallites in enamel. They are huge, and so that is just an illustration of what you see before. Here it is in length, you can see them, and here they are in cross-section. So you can see how these crystallites are really rather enormous, and if you were to be able to put it next to an image of bone or dentin, it's really quite dramatically different. Another thing that you need to know, and that is enamel is so highly mineralized that if you demineralize a tooth, enamel disappears. There is so much mineral and so little else that during demineralization the enamel disappears. So if you look at a section of a tooth like this, the enamel might have been here, but it's all gone. Okay, the enamel is literally gone. So enamel by weight has 96% mineral. Even by volume it is about 85%. So it's huge amounts. And very little protein to go with it. Dentin, in contrast, is 65% by weight, hydroxyapatite, and cementum 61% by weight. If the amount of mineral is an indication of the hardness of the tissue, enamel is clearly the hardest of the tissue in the body, while dentin is a little considerably less hard, and cementum is the softest of the hard dental tissues. Now let's go and look at the principal player, and that is the secretory amyloblast that is involved in the formation of the proteins of the enamel matrix. You're seeing here a very plain and simplistic diagram. It's very good. I want you to notice this. 60 micrometers is the average length of a secretory amyloblast. That is huge. And in cross-section, 7 micrometers, that is about, that's kind of a more normal dimension. And what you're seeing here is several things. First of all, these are polarized cells. And as in the case of odontoblast was also a huge cell, as you may recall, the polarized cells have their nuclei on the basal side, and this would be apical. And so please remember again that in both the odontoblast and the amyloblast, the nucleus on the basal side, which is away from the secretory end, and that the secretory end, which is the apical side, is facing the dentino-enamel junction. So in both cases, the cells start out by facing each other, and they face each other with their apical ends. Then they start to produce the matrix that they are responsible for, and then they literally move apart from each other in a basal direction. Okay? If you understand that basic point, I think that is very, very good to remember. Now, what you see in these amyloblasts is that they have a basal terminal web and junctional complexes, and they also have an apical terminal web and junctional complexes. So they are very well connected with each other. The junctional complexes, in essence, are closing up the space in between, so nothing much moves between the cells and the enamel matrix. And the terminal webs are considered to be responsible for slight sideways movements of the amyloblast during the secretory phase. as you will see, the amyloblasts are not going straight back. They are kind of going in a sinusoidal path, and these terminal webs are considered responsible for it. They are contractile elements, so some actin is involved in this form of myosin. But the terminal webs are not there for decoration only, they really are helping in the movement of these cells. Nucleus, Golgi systems, that's all clear. A fairly large amount of rough endoplasmic reticulum, of course mitochondria. But what is critical in the case of the amyloblast, secretory amyloblast, and what makes it clearly identifiable is this process. This is the process that is extending on the apical end. It's known as the Thoms process. There is really no other term for it. We have tried amyloblastic process. Doesn't work that way. Thoms process sticks. And the Thoms process is only present in the secretory amyloblasts. Only in the secretory amyloblasts. So when you have evidence of the presence of a Thoms process, there is no question you are in the secretory phase. And it is through the Thoms process that the secretory granules are releasing their products into the matrix of the enamel. Just to make the point that all polarized cells have this basic kind of arrangement of a junctional complex, so this is nothing special that we have just with the amyloblast and also the odontoblast, but just a reminder that, you know, that's not so very strange. There are very large number of genes that are necessary to maintain this kind of morphology and the polarity of these cells. This is not something that comes lightly. Now, what do these amyloblasts produce? As we already said, amylogenins and non-amylogenins. These are all the proteins of the enamel matrix, and we will go into them, especially in the amylogenins, which are really critical for this first phase. But there are also already proteinases being formed to break down the proteins that are being laid down. So there are two kinds of enamel proteinases that have been identified. Matrix metalloprotease 20, enamelysin, specifically found in enamel, and also this proteinase kallikrein 4, which kicks in slightly later, also breaking down enamel proteins. So the enamel matrix proteins really all have pretty short life, and they're very quickly broken down. And the one that is really the most dramatic one is the protein known as amylogenin. Because amylogenin is laid down during the secretory phase, as they all are, but it only is present in the secretory phase and is removed entirely, that is just the point, removed entirely at the end of the maturation phase. So the amylogenin, of all the proteins that are being removed, the amylogenin is the one that is being removed en masse and makes that big difference between the 85% protein content versus the 15% protein content. All of that is removal of amylogenin. Okay? So the amylogenin is in actual mass the largest of the proteins that is being produced. Most of it is amylogenin. So let's now look at these individual structures. Amylogenin is a most fantastic protein, and it's the best studied in enamel because it has such a major role. It's highly conserved. Well, that's terrific. Don't worry about this. It's small, protein-rich, hydrophobic, but also a little bit hydrophilic, with hydrophilic ends, really. So that's all very nice. But now here is the thing. This is what you have to know. This is a protein whose gene is located on the X and the Y chromosomes. AMLX and AMLY. And these are candidates, of course, for any of the sex-linked forms of amniogenesis imperfecta that you've already heard from from Dr. Yuan. So this is a very interesting group of genes. They did probably not start out on the sex chromosomes. They were probably translocated to those. They probably started out along with the other proteins on chromosome 4, but at some point they were translocated and now they are sex linked. Very interesting. And they produce a large number of forms as a result of alternative splicing, at least 5 forms, and there may be more, from the X chromosome and 2 from the Y. And most of the amylogenins that are being produced from the genes on the X chromosome, and even in males only about 10% is formed from Y transcripts. Now the amylogenins constitute, as I said, most of the volume of the nanomatrix proteins prior to maturation. So they are the really huge players initially, and then they are all lost. But I have to mention one additional thing, and that is, here you see the situation in mouse, where of course it has been studied much more in detail, and what you're seeing here are the exons and the introns of the amylogenin gene, and what you find is that there are a series of exons here, the small ones, and this here. 1, 2, and 7 are fairly stable. They are found in all of the transcripts. But when you get to the smaller ones, especially numbers 4 and 5, they're frequently skipped. And so you can see that many of the isoforms have 1 or 2 missing. Okay? So they may be missing from the transcripts. And exon number 6 has most of the trouble and lots of splicing points. And what you find is that there really are only 2 isoforms which have a complete transcript of exon 6. And they are probably the ones that are important for the mineralization of the enamel matrix. The other ones in which a part of 6 is not included may have another role. As we will see later this week, amylogenin also probably has a role in signaling in odontoblast differentiation and in cementoblast differentiation. And so these amylogenins with a partial transcription of 6 are probably the ones that are involved in that. So these isoforms are probably the ones that we are dealing with most. Now, when they are secreted, when these amylogenin proteins are secreted, they are moved into the external environment of the amyloblast. And I just want to show you this picture. I've shown it to you before, and it is a very important picture. Number one, it makes the point that when dentin starts to mineralize, this is pre-dentin and this is dentin, at this very point secretion of the enamel matrix begins. So that is very much tied together. It's something we don't 100% understand. But the point is that now here is the extracellular matrix, and you notice en passant that we have not yet atoms processed. So in the earliest phases of the secretory amyloblast, there is no Tomes process yet. So for a little while, we don't get the Tomes process. Now you see here the matrix, and very quickly, what you're seeing here is that at this point, these dark lines appear. Those are hydroxyapatite crystallites. And so the hydroxyapatite crystallites are deposited and start to form in that matrix almost immediately. There is no area like pre-dentin, there's no such thing in enamel, and these hydroxyapatite crystallites just about go all the way to the surface of the amyloblasts. So they are present throughout the matrix as it's being laid down, and this particular diagram suggests that these are very thin hydroxyapatite crystallites. They are literally needle-like. Now, the one thing that you see in here, if you look closely, can you actually see it? I'm not sure. Yeah, it looks gray here, but it actually, when you look at it slightly higher power, it looks stippled. We called it early on stippled material. When I was in your place, we started looking at these EM, and what we saw was what we called stippled material. Now, why was it stippled material? Because the amelogenin is capable of self-assembly into nanospheres. So the nanospheres that you see indicated here, which are formed by a clustering of monomers of amelogenin, or dimers, or trimers, or hexamers, all of them kind of come in here, they self-assemble into little nanospheres, which are between 10 and 25 nanometers in diameter. And these nanospheres are the stipples in the stippled material. So when you look at an EM of enamel matrix, you see these little dots, and these are the nanospheres. Now the nanospheres are actually able to form chains and ribbons, and so these are ribbons, these are chains. And what do they do? How do they arrange themselves? Well, they arrange themselves in ribbons around these very, very young hydroxyapatite crystallites. This here, this is a needle, a hydroxyapatite crystallite needle, very thin. It is very quickly reaching the length of a mature hydroxyapatite crystallite in enamel. That means about 200 nanometers. But the thickness of that crystallite is minimal, like 1.5, so it is really a very thin needle. Now why is that? That is because as the ameloblast is producing the amelogenins, you see the amelogenins coming out as the typical glycoprotein chains that they originally are, they then very rapidly form these nanospheres, and these are the nanospheres, they literally are going around the hydroxyapatite crystallite. And in this picture here, what you're seeing, this is the size of one nanosphere. And if you look closely, you see where these arrows are, that you have little light areas. These are the nanospheres. Okay, they literally are lying at the periphery of the hydroxyapatite crystallite. Now, what is the effect of that arrangement? Well, they have an interaction. The amelogenins interact with the hydroxyapatite crystallites by their C-terminus, which is literally attached at a very close range to the hydroxyapatite crystallite. And the net effect, without going into the details of the interaction, the net effect of this particular interaction is that the hydroxyapatite crystallite cannot grow in width. It is physically prevented from doing so. And the only way the crystallite can grow is in length. And so for the first period of its existence, the hydroxyapatite crystallite is able to grow in length, but not in width. Now the amelogenin, and here's a very nice diagram. This is the Thoms process of the ameloblast. And this is a picture of the amelogenin in its stretched out length, and now the amelogenins fold up in this kind of way. They fold up and they come together and they have little attachments and relationships between them. That's all fine. But the thing is, what you're seeing here is the C telopeptide here is attached to the hydroxyapatite crystallite, and that's the critical thing. As long as that is the case, that hydroxyapatite crystallite cannot grow in width. Now what's going to happen is that between A and C is the maturing phase of the enamel, we are beginning to break down the amelogenin. It's going to be broken down, and the first thing that goes is that C telopeptide. And once that is gone, and once the relationship between the amelogenin and the hydroxyapatite crystallite is severed, the crystallite can now increase in width. And so what you find is that there is a breakdown of the amylogenin, and now the crystallite can grow. Okay, that is essentially what is happening here. Alright, so this is a very important glycoprotein for the development and the maturation of enamel. Now let's briefly look at the others. We don't know nearly as much about the other proteins as we know about amylogenin. Amyloblastin is the next one. Amyloblastin used to be called amylin and sheplin. Perfectly, I personally prefer sheplin because it tells you where it ends up. It ends up in the organic sheets of the enamel prisms. And so it appears very early on, right at the beginning of the development. Okay, it's all linked to glycosylated, but it is located, its gene is located with the siblings on the Q arm of chromosome 4. And immediately after secretion, very shortly thereafter, really, we have a proteolytic cleavage and discard the C terminal ends and preserve the N terminal halves. And the N-terminal halves of the amyloblastin move to the prism sheets. And what we know is, we don't know a whole lot, we know that they have a low affinity for hydroxyapatite, and so it is possible that as they are accumulating in the area of the prism sheet, they prevent mineralization and crystal growth in those areas. So that's for what it is worth. Okay? Now let's look at enamelin. Enamelin is actually the one protein that stays with the hydroxyapatite, acidic, hydrophilic. Again, the gene is located on the chromosome 4 on the Q arm. And what we find is that these intact proteins are found at the mineralization front, right where the amyloblast is, and that they may have a role in the elongation of the crystallites. So they are friendly to crystallite growth. Amylogenin was certainly not, and amyloblastin also is preventing crystallite growth. Enamelin may, in fact, be the one that's stimulated. The cleavage products are unstable, but there is enough enamelin remaining to be attached to the hydroxyapatite and be present in mature enamel. So if you look at mature enamel, the most of the body of the enamel tissue has either enamelin in the enamel prisms and amyloblastin in the prism sheets. Just a brief moment to talk about the interesting situation of that chromosome 4 in humans. Just again reminding you that these were the sibling genes that were found on chromosome 4, you find that the amyloblastin and the enamelins are found over here. And there's another group of proteins that we have not mentioned before that are all involved in the stabilization of calcium phosphate in the body fluid. Casein, which we don't worry too much about in our case. Statherin, which is a key component in saliva. And other proline-rich proteins. So it's interesting that all of these components that are involved in the calcium phosphate stabilization and in mineralization and in slow down of mineralization are all clustered on this chromosome. What's even more interesting is that we now think that the enamel matrix genes originally all come from one single one, that they actually duplicated and slightly changed. And so they are strongly related to each other. There really are major components that are very similar from one to the other. And we find that that is true for many of the mammals. This is the primate, which is what I just showed you before. And again, these same proteins are found in a cluster in the rodents and the rats, and even more dramatically in the mouse. The mouse has a situation very close to humans. The cow, the sheep, and the pig are okay. The point is that this is something that you find in mammals, and this relationship of these different proteins is very interesting to observe. Okay, The final protein that you find in enamel, we're not 100% sure is even a true enamel matrix protein. It's present really in very limited amounts at the DEJ and in structures known as tufts. It's found in other tissues of the body. Its gene is found on chromosome 1. And all we can say of it is may act as a nucleated mineralization process. With this kind of listing, you know that we don't know much about it, I think. But we know where it's located, near the DEJ and in the area of the tufts. Now, to make life exciting and fun, here's a diagram that we had before at different magnifications. This is wildly different magnifications. These are the cells, the amyloblast, here is the dentin, and here you see the early stages of development of the enamel matrix. And what you find is, here's amyloblastin, and amyloblastin continues to form, and you find enamelin, those are those little things here, that is those nanospheres. And now what you also find is tufftalin, here's tufftalin, and here's a protein that involves with and that interacts with tufftalin, which we don't know much about either. And then, and this is important because I want you to see this, this is dentin cyanophosphoprotein. Please remember that this area of the dentin enamel junction is a really a very interesting and confused area. You can have enamelin in the dentin, you can have dentin cyanophosphoprotein in the enamel, there are indications that these different cells, odontoblasts and amyloblasts, can for a while in fact produce the other proteins. But basically, once it gets straightened out, the amyloblasts identify only, of course, with the enamelins, the amyloblastins, and the amylogenins. And the dark lines that you see here are the hydroxyapatite crystallites. Okay? It's kind of a cute picture, but don't worry too much about it. Now, here comes the point. We're now going on to enamel maturation. So far, we have laid down protein. We have started to break down. I mean, there is already some breakdown going on with enamelysin and calicrin. But at some point, the full thickness of enamel has been laid down, and now we get into the maturation stage. Let's look at this picture here. This picture shows you not yet complete full thickness, but a little bit of it. And I want you to notice that this is lighter than further out. This peripheral enamel matrix is darker. And what that really means is that already some proteins have been removed here. So right from the start, even while the secretory phase is going on, there is some breakdown of proteins, there is some removal of proteins, and there is some growth of hydroxyapatite crystallites. So there is some maturation going on during the secretory phase. And what you find now is that during maturation, that now becomes center stage, that activity becomes center stage. But during the maturation phase, what we find is, I think this is a very good diagram, you see here a series of arrows, and these arrows indicate by their thickness where most of the mineral is. And so clearly there is more mineral on the incisal occlusal side of the tooth than there is on the cervical side, and there is more mineral near the DEJ than there is near the periphery. That is the picture that you see here. There's more mineral here and less mineral at the periphery, and that's essentially what this picture shows. So there is, if you want to make a combination of both, most mineral at the beginning is in this area here, specifically near the dentin enamel junction. And what you're seeing on this particular radiograph, and this was an X-ray generated picture of a ground section. This is an incisor tooth, deciduous incisor tooth, which is in function. Here is a permanent tooth below that is still being formed. And if you compare the lightness of the enamel, the brightest enamel is the more mineralized, And as you go further down, you see that the brightness reduces until it becomes almost dark. And you notice also that the greatest brightness is at the DEJ. So that is the pattern. What you find is that the maturation goes from the incisofusal site in a cervical direction and from the DEJ outwards to the periphery of the enamel. Okay? So that is the pattern of maturation. And what happens during maturation? Number one, the amelogenins are being removed. Prime time, big time. Number two, the hydroxyapatite crystallites increase, not in length, but in diameter. So the increase of the hydroxyapatite crystallite size is only in diameter, from 1.5 nanometers to 50 nanometers. Okay, that is where the growth is. So they don't grow longer, they grow thicker. If you look at the histology of this episode, what you're seeing here, these are secretory ameloblasts here, these are transition ameloblasts here when all of the enamel has been produced, and here are the maturation ameloblasts over here. Now if you look at this, the cells are here, these are the ameloblasts, and this is a unique stain. This is the stain from slides 301, 302, and 303 that you already know about. And what you're noticing here is this extreme redness. And in this particular stain, that redness indicates the presence of amelogenins. And so when you see the redness here, that means that this is still pretty immature enamel matrix. Where the amelogenins have been removed, it is gray. And so that is where the maturation begins. And so in some parts of the enamel, during the transition phase, you can see that the amelogenins are only still present at the periphery of the enamel matrix, but that most of them have already been broken down in the more the areas near the DEJ. And then during the maturation, what you're seeing here is the red area for the amelogenins, area where the amelogenins have been broken down, and here, this is where there are almost no amelogenins left, there are none left, and what you are left with is a space, and this is now enamel. There are a series of phases of ameloblasts, and this is secretory, with the Tomes process, transition, where the cell gets removed and essentially rebuilt, and then you have alternating patches of smooth bordered ameloblasts and rubble bordered ameloblasts. Okay? In the same time, what you're noticing is that the outside areas of the enamel organ have changed from a flat group of cells. They gradually produce these little capillary extensions. That is essential for the maturation phase as well. Okay, here is the diagram, grammatic examples, secretory, transition, SA, and RA. Notice that during the SA phase, the junctional complex is on the basal site, while during the RA phase, the junctional complex is on the apical ends. Here are the maturation ameloblasts in actual view. They have a rubble border, very much like an osteoclast does. And I think I'm in the way of the next class. So what I'm going to do is this afternoon, please be on time, okay, 1 o'clock. I will continue with this here because this is important for us to deal with. And then we'll go on with the enamel prisms. So I will see you this afternoon at 1, and we'll end now.